The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Episode 0 of State of the Empire. This episode was recorded on November 1st, 2012, just after the announcement that Disney had bought Lucasfilm. We didn't yet know that we were destined to record an ongoing podcast series about Star Wars speculation, but in this episode, you'll hear us begin our search to find Star Wars news in Alderaan places.
Hey guys, welcome to a very impromptu episode of Nerdy Show. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Hex.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Doug.
I'm Mark with a C.
And I'm Matt.
Now, for listeners who come on intermittently, Doug is the GM of Ghostbusters Resurrection, the Ghostbusters tabletop role-playing podcast we recently added to the Nerdy Show Network. Mark with a C, you should probably know, he's kind of a big deal. Indie nerd musician, runs the show Real Congregation on Nerdy Show. And Matt is our pop culture correspondent who joins us really frequently for matters of sci-fi especially, but also our E3 coverage. Because he lives in Hollywood, y'all. So today,
not that Hollywood, Florida. Crap.
No, not Hollywood,
the
Florida.
Real Hollywood,
The dirty one.
Hollywood, yeah. Florida is pretty real and pretty dirty. But that's another discussion.
It is quite dirty.
Today, October 30th, we got some crazy news that pretty much fucked our brains and the brains of everybody else.
4:30 p.m. Eastern.
Lucasfilm was bought by Disney. I guess we could have speculated on it if we'd ever thought that this could. Something like this was conceived.
Well, because nobody thought George Lucas would ever sell it, because that's his baby.
I feel like we should have seen it coming.
In a way, we should have.
Yeah. But I also was...
But not this soon.
I was blinded by the whole concept of George Lucas, like, you can have my friend.
Yeah, relinquishing control.
My cold, dead fingers.
And undervaluing it just so that it goes to the company that he trusts most, too. Because it's worth more than $4 billion.
Yeah, how is it undervalued? Yeah, that could fix, the deficit.
For all of the properties when Star Wars has fingers on?
That's a deal. It's expensive, but
they're going to make it back simply on merchandising of the first new movie alone. Plus, you know what? They're going to make it back on the merchandising of the old movies alone. It's all going to flow back in, and it's one heck of a deal that they got, I think.
Here's in brief what we know as of this recording. As I said, $4.05 billion was the purchase. Kathleen Kennedy is...
She was appointed the president of Lucasfilm as well as their brand manager.
Yeah, for Star Wars and everything.
Who is this woman?
For Lucasfilm and all of the subsidiaries, which include Industrial Light and Magic, Skywalker Sound, and all of the specific Star Wars...
So products. We can just say everything.
Everything
George Lucas related.
Most everything.
Lucas's
empire
is now.
She started out as she's probably the most powerful woman in Hollywood yesterday. Now today she's probably the most powerful woman
in the world.
Well, yeah, she Empress Kennedy.
Yeah.
I mean, she is for those that don't know, she is the second most successful film producer in the world, second only to her mentor, Steven Spielberg.
Well, maybe it'll take her somewhere one day then.
and she's been producer or associate producer on Indiana Jones films, E.T., both Gremlins films, Back to the Futures, The Goonies, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Batteries Not Included.
Oh, these are good movies.
All the Jurassic Parks, The Adventures of Tintin.
Yeah, she knows what she's doing.
Not seriously. Just good movies, though, because she was also a producer for a lot of Midnight Shenanigans films, including the Avatar film.
Well, she didn't know.
But here's the thing,
she didn't know. She probably liked the cartoon.
Those movies made money, and it's the job of the producer to make money.
Yeah, but if a producer,
she's really good.
A producer comes in and says, "Hey, we're making a movie based on Avatar, this cartoon," you'd be stupid not to do it because it's a big thing, and she's good at making big franchise movies.
But she's also good at making good movies too. She was the executive producer for Schindler's List. As well as
was the blockbuster hit of the summer. It was a good family film.
It was a blockbuster hit.
It was a great
huge
comedy. That list that he made. It's great.
If I can just jump in here for a second and say, at $4.5 billion, had I known that this is what George Lucas would settle for, I would have done a Kickstarter campaign. I mean, really, who wouldn't have said this? Lo-Fi Dude in Florida, Mark with a C, is running a Kickstarter campaign to buy Star Wars from George Lucas. Disney would have been like, yeah, we can't fuck with that. I mean, you can't mess with positive press.
Well, I'd love it when people ask you your credentials, like, yeah, well, my favorite movie, my favorite Star Wars anything is a Christmas special. That's my goddamn qualification for why I should run Lucasfilm.
So my biggest question is, does this make Captain EO part of the Star Wars canon as I've always wanted it to be?
It should be a prequel to, like, way before the Jedis were created. It's like Jedi was a guardian of peace and justice for thousands of years. This is before that. Like, Captain EO was the first Jedi because he uses the power of happiness.
As that's clearly the Force. Yeah. I mean, right there in its rawest form.
It made me feel something.
Another massive announcement that came along with this purchase was that in 2015...
The first new one.
They will be starting a new trilogy. Episode 7 will be released on...
Already done.
In 2015. And Kathleen Kennedy shall be the executive producer for all of the sequels.
And with, quote, one new movie every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So basically like the prequels.
Sorry.
Now, George Lucas, he won't be a director, he won't be anything like that, but he will still be a creative consultant.
Oh, come on, he wasn't a creative anything. He shouldn't be consulting.
Hey, if he wasn't a creative consultant, you know how many people would call foul? I mean,
can they still say no? That's bad.
Yeah, of course.
Or are they going to be like, oh, we love you, let's do it?
No, he's basically, what I took that to mean, it was saying he's creative consultant, he's handing the reins over to Kathleen Kennedy and everyone else. And George Lucas in that video basically said, he basically announced his retirement from all things Star Wars. And my reaction to that was, good for you, George. Because, no, I mean, seriously, not from a cynical point, but like, this is Star Wars is like a monkey he's been carrying on his back for how many years now? And he's been wanting to make the personal films and do other things. So, good. You know, he doesn't have to deal with it anymore.
On that point, the nicest thing that I heard him say so far in that the sit down interview that he posted on YouTube was that he gets the chance to be a fan now.
Yes.
He gets to be a Star Wars fan, which is something that he's never been able to have the chance to do. And, you know, it's like, well, you know, he deserves that moment to sit back and see, you know, really just kind of take it from our perspective.
Yeah. Like, I mean, as far as like retirement goes, like if anyone's earned a good retirement, despite what anyone says about prequels or anything else, it would be, this is the guy who gave us the original Star Wars. I think he deserves a little bit of happiness, a little bit of private.
It's sort of, I guess, but it's also a shame that he can't become a fan of the originals and then watch what he did to them afterwards. Because then he would understand.
This is.
Am I the only one who's just dying to know what George Lucas is going to do with the rest of his time, though? Like, and I expect he would give a really short answer, like, "What are you going to do with your free time, George? I'm going to grow turnips."
Well, he said after the release of Red Wing that he was
Red Tails.
Red Tails. After the release of Red Tails, that he was.
That is a very different film, Cap.
He was interested in, you know, pursuing experimental films and like he used to do, like THX and all that stuff. And he was frustrated by the lukewarm reception of the 3D things. And basically he was like, okay, I can't win with Star Wars. I can't win. So I'm going to step back and I'm going to make the films I want to make. So he said that earlier this year. That was no surprise. What none of us figured was we figured, okay, so George Lucas is just going to sit back, you know, let Star Wars do as Star Wars will and release these 3D things and not really fuss over it. Except that then, boom, he organized a deal. And the only thing I can really compare this to, because Star Wars is such a big thing, and we've all grown up living with its existence. So it never really – and we knew that George Lucas had dominion over it. But it never felt like, you know, an independent creator-owned sort of thing. But in my mind, the only thing I can compare it to is Peter Laird's sale of Ninja Turtles to Viacom. Because there's a guy who, for whatever reason, started feeling burdened by his creation and then – come hell or high water, he was like, fuck it, I don't want it, take it all. And then a lot of people were divided about Peter Laird's run on Turtles, right. not like George Lucas's treatment of Star Wars, but then now there's this corporate entity that's taking care of it. And in doing so, though you can be skeptical of that, I mean, well, with the Michael Bay script for the Turtles film and all that, but in the meantime, you have people who were fans of the property creating the new show, which is – all in all, a very positive thing.
See, you gave a very real world example of what it was like for one franchise being bought out by a bigger corporation. in my mind, because you cut me, I bleed midichlorian. To me, this is like the Dalai Lama saying, everyone who's Buddhist, we're giving Buddhism to the Vatican. It's like, this is like, we're that's what it felt like. But if you're being real about it, yeah, at the end of the day, it's just a corporation being bought by a bigger corporation. And we were talking a little bit like how they bought out Marvel. And for a while, a lot of people were like, oh, they bought out Marvel. Well, they're going to make.
We were freaking out.
One of our season two episodes was Disney and Marvel sitting in a tree. Was I think the name of it. Everybody was going, oh, get ready for Marvel to suck. Get ready for Marvel to be a family. It's like, no, Disney wanted Marvel for Marvel. Not for, you know.
What happened?
Yeah, the Avengers happened. Yeah. And then, you know, all those other awesome things
happened. And who did they let direct the Avengers?
Just fucking Whedon.
Oh, they let him do it. Yeah, that was great. Maybe he'll direct the new Star Wars movies, I hope. Yeah.
Even if it's not just, I don't care who directs it as long as they want to be directing it. I never felt that George Lucas wanted to direct the prequels or anything like that. Get someone who wants to do it.
Well, I never felt like he wanted to make a good movie.
Anyway. No, you're being hard on the old man.
I am.
I'm excited because I think that putting another director in there, a younger director that loved Star Wars, that grew up with Star Wars, that was really inspired by it, would really want to do a great service to it. Mm-hmm. Kind of do the kind of stuff that Seth Green is doing with Robot Chicken and Star Wars Detours. I mean, Seth Green's medium is comedy. But still, you feel that authentic Star Wars feeling.
Well, there's so many filmmakers even older than us who have that same passion for Star Wars. I think it's the good thing is that everyone's ripe for the picking. Like they can basically get anyone they want. What filmmaker out there is going to say, nah, Star Wars, you're offering me Star Wars? Nah, I don't think I'll do that. Yeah. So really, they get to pick from the cream of the crop what they want to do with it.
Mark and Matt, you guys are here because you guys are among our collective, the greatest Star Wars fanatics. We all love Star Wars. We're all obsessed with Star Wars, but you two come from different scopes. Like Matt, you absorb everything. There was a time where there wasn't a single piece of Star Wars literature you hadn't read, and it's still very, very... Mm-hmm. I understand that where you're at right now is you've still read pretty much everything there is, expanded universe expert, and you've got a lot of strong opinions.
Part of that whole kind of, I should have seen it coming, is that Clone Wars had already killed the expanded universe. I mean, within like the last year or so. I mean, they were killing Jedi left and right that had already died in previous material. And so, like, I guess it's not a shock that they're doing it. It's weird because I'm still trying to collect my thoughts on the idea that, like, they are kind of, like, just nailing closing the coffin for good on, like, you know, 20-plus years, I guess, now of expanded universe material. But at the same time, I'm still so excited. I felt like I did when I was 13 and I saw the Entertainment Weekly with Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson on the front in Jedi robes and like, oh my God, this is happening, you know? Like, I was getting it so many different places. I don't even know exactly how I heard about it first today. Like, I was just like being bombarded with social media. I'm not even sure how it happened. But there's so many different fronts that Disney's going to attack this from. When they finally do get into the theme park business of Star Wars, they have to compete with Harry Potter. They have to blow it out of the water. This is not just going to be one ride. This is going to be an entire like section of Epcot or of Disney Hollywood Studios.
The irony of that is that on our way to driving from Orlando to Nashville to go to the Geek Media Expo, we had a similar conversation. Like, they have a good relationship with Star Wars. Like, Disney has to beat Harry Potter. Why don't they do a Star Wars world? And we... those words were said.
Because Disney owns it, I'm pretty sure they have no choice. They own Star Wars now. They see it as like, we have to make something in our park for Star Wars.
Well, because Disney, you know, the vibe that I got was that they didn't really know what to do with Disney Hollywood Studios. And that's like, you know, they're changing hands and that's no longer MGM and everything else. And there's all these sections of the park that feel empty. But they've always had Lucasfilm stuff there. And when we were on our way up to Tennessee, I was like, you know what? Disney's scared for some reason. They're scared. Well, for good reason. They're scared of the Harry Potter world. They're scared of like all the business that's generated. And I was telling you guys, what's the one thing that Disney has that can compete with something as big as Harry Potter?
Star Wars.
And the answer is Star Wars. That's the only thing that could possibly beat something. I mean, we're talking about beat like it's like there's a competition. But as far as the corporate entities are concerned, Star Wars is the only thing that can make more money than Harry Potter. So now that they officially own it, they don't have to like negotiate with Lucasfilm because now they own Lucasfilm. I hope that they're smart enough to go, hey, man, Let's expand that little area. Let's get a little wizarding world of force users. You know, really...
Yeah, if you just imagine what could be done here, think about how many people go to Epcot and with the sole intention of drinking around the world. Well, imagine if you could drink around the Star Wars universe. If you could stop in and hang out and drink at the Mos Eisley Cantina. If that's the only mention of Star Wars in the park, besides Star Tours, you better believe all of us are going to be there and you're going to be scraping us off the ground.
I'll tell you what, like, man, I know better than that. Wooher makes that drink out of people.
I was just saying, like, you look at where Star Tours is now, and it's like they've crammed all these different things that they wish were bigger. Like the gift shop is like Tatooine, like Tatooine Traders, and then you got the Ewok Village, and you got the AT-AT, and then now the ride itself is every little piece of Star Wars that ever existed all on the ride. I'm hoping they really expand it, like really make it a thing that you can walk around. I mean, I don't know how much property they have to build on, but
I think
and if you think about it, I mean, Disney Hollywood Studios now, I mean, they've also started to pack in a lot of Pixar into that park.
Yeah.
So now if you take Pixar and Marvel and Disney and the Muppets, and you could make them into zones in Disney Hollywood Studios, how great of a park would that be?
Better than Oz Adventure.
Can they make Marvel?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, the thing is that I was always weird about...
Sony is about to sell back Spider-Man to Disney in order to bail themselves out of their financial troubles.
Well, I was going
to...
Oh, really? Fuck.
Whoa.
Yep.
I did not know that. That's huge.
I didn't know Sony had
that was like trouble. Nancy Grace-style bombshell. Damn.
that's one step closer to my dream movie of a buddy cop film of Hugh Jackman and Andrew Garfield of Wolverine. I want that buddy cop.
Well, the thing that was weird is, doesn't Universal have more than one Marvel based ride, like the Hulk?
They have a Marvel
but
island.
But Disney owns Marvel. Now, cool, so
it's a license.
It was like a license. They licensed the theme park rights out to Universal.
Okay, see, that's what I thought.
But if they're going to I don't know if they're reneging or if they're not going to re-up it or whatever. Originally, before it was Marvel Superhero Island, Universal designed it to be Gotham City.
Yeah.
And it was going to have all these Batman things and a little bit of DC stuff sprinkled around.
And in another direction, when Disney bought Marvel, Disney had licensed things like Darkwing Duck and Chip and Dale and the Muppets to Boom Studios for comic books. Star Wars and Lucasfilm properties have had a relationship with Dark Horse Comics for 30 years now.
Well, where did Star Wars start in the comic world?
Marvel. And I feel bad for Dark Horse because at some point this license is going to expire. And right now we've got the only Star Wars thing that's excited me in forever is about to happen this January. Brian Wood is writing a book called Star Wars. And Brian Wood, one of the most incredible, like, indie credibility blockbuster writers in comics right now. It's basically a book that takes place after A New Hope and is about essentially the Empire retaliating against the terrorist forces of the rebellion. And it's going to be amazing.
That sounds like the Empire begins to debate the pros and cons of whether or not it should strike back or maybe hold off of it.
The rebels, do they have a weapon of mass destruction? No, it was a photon torpedo.
And notice what the two key components were when they announced that series was that they said it should be a series in which no one needs to have any prior expanded universe knowledge to get into, and that it was supposed to harken back to the era of pre-Empire Strikes Back, like not knowing where the series could be taken. This is kind of part of that whole, like, should have seen it all coming, because, like, with this whole sales that, like, you know, the old expanded universe is done and that this is a brand new era for Star Wars.
Essentially, a Star Wars reboot has been engineered, and it's happened in a way that's never happened before with any prior property, and it's happened in a way that is somehow more natural and graceful than has ever been done.
I don't think we really know that until we see what the movies are going to contain.
But I see, as far as the forces converging, it's not DC Comics saying, everything's done, everything starts at one again, fuck y'all. And it's not something ending, it's kind of like something, you know, came to its end in a very sort of natural way, and now it's all... The Phoenix has risen and everything's getting green.
Look at Marvel. Every time Marvel does something, they're just like, oh, well, that's a different universe. That's a split.
Well, the thing with Star Wars, what we learned at Star Wars Celebration, it is one continuous universe where everything is supposed to be canon. But there's a precedent that there are several levels of canon and they can override each other.
Right.
There's George canon and blah, 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 all the way down to secondary canon, which the king of secondary canon, which is overwritten by everything else, is the Christmas special.
Right.
And it, but it's like
hey,
Star Wars.
Hey, I will come over there, Hex.
But Star
if,
Wars.
If you
want
to hear more about that, they've got our most recent celebration episode is linked to this page.
But Star Wars already has this precedence of having no problem of writing over what it's already done and saying this is still the same universe. It's not right. Like Marvel with the there are multiple universes.
Right, but there are a lot. Like I mean, Matt probably knows better than me because I haven't read all the books and everything. But I know that like at the time when they were like before Episode One came out, the rumors that Anakin built C-3PO. It was like, wait a minute, I thought C-3PO was like off the assembly line. What do you mean someone built him? I thought he was like 300 years old by the time A New Hope started.
Hmm. You know. Well, I mean, even in like in 1978's Splinter of the Mind's Eye, the very first Star Wars novel even written, there's the whole thing at the end is 3PO and R2 were deactivated, and when Luke finds them at the end, deactivated, he flips on 3PO, and the first thing 3PO is screaming is, he somehow knew the access codes. And, you know, that all ends up, you know, it's not intended to say back in 78 that Darth Vader created 3PO, but, like, it's enough to, like, Star Wars canon's always figured out a way to, like, fix itself and band-aid itself. There's even a guy whose sole job at Lucasfilm is to do that. And since June, when I guess he found out there was going to be a 7, 8, and 9, when these problems have popped up because of like Clone Wars and things like that, he's just been saying for the last couple of months, well, hold on a second, guys. We're going to get to that. We're going to fix the Clone Wars timeline. And I guess the fix is that it's, you know, there's going to be a 7, 8, and 9.
I mean, that sounds like a full-time job.
We talk about this in the episode, but basically there was this moment where they were going to kill a character in a video game when a writer was going to use him again. And so this guy caught it and had to tell the video game, whoa, 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 don't kill him off. We still need to use him.
Weird.
See, I'm a little confused because I'm under the impression that there's all these contradictions coming from everywhere in the Star Wars universe, but it's really all coming from one person not knowing anything about his own creation and then just saying something and it's suddenly true. Well,
and now Grandpa Funny Book is retired.
And there's an entire person's job, which is to fix this one person's mess over and over again. So really all the contradictions are from the one person giving it up.
Well,
you can kind of boil the holocron down to everything in the Star Wars universe is right. But some things are technically more right than others. But why can't they all be right?
See, yeah, like this is the thing. I was saying this in the car on the way over. It's like George Lucas. I'm not an apologist, although I'm coming off that way. But I'm just saying this is a guy who wanted to be a writer filmmaker since however long ago, and he suddenly finds himself the head of the biggest film in history, and then is the head of this huge corporation with toys and millions and billions of dollars. So now he's like a businessman and has to make business decisions that influence his creative work. He never wanted to be a business guy. He never wanted to do that.
Admittedly, he was a very good business guy for a creative personality because of how much he held on to the licensing.
Right. He played it really smart early on, but clearly it's just gotten too big for him to handle. I mean, for anyone.
It's not fun anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And
now he's being berated by people who used to love him.
Yeah, exactly. So as far as, like, George Lucas is concerned, he can now say, I'm no longer a businessman. And who'd he get to replace him? The smartest businesswoman in Hollywood, basically. Like, I mean, the someone who actually wants that job and wants to do that. That's, like, to me, that's, like, the best news ever.
Who he's been friends with for years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And who is well connected with some of the cornerstones of creativity in Hollywood.
And she's got her head above the water. Like she knows what's really going on. Like it sounds like she's very aware of like what fans would be saying.
Right. That's why we're even talking about a 7, 8, and 9 at the moment.
Right.
And which is interesting because while he was working on the original Star Wars, he was talking about, he always had 9 stories planned. He always had 3 sets of trilogies set up. However, he went back in 99 and 2008 in separate interviews and all continually during then saying, I never had an idea for sequels.
Right.
That never existed. I never wanted it. And more than that, he kept on insisting that there would never be another Star Wars movie.
Okay, now you got to remember, like when he says, oh, I had the sequels written, I had them in my head and I wanted to divide them up. The movies that we got are so crazily different from what was originally planned you know, you can't really compare. That's like saying, wait a minute, he's one hand, he says he had prequel ideas, but now he says he didn't. It's like, well, probably because the prequel ideas he had involved 80 million different characters that just don't exist.
And I mean, really what Lucas had to start out with was a massive outline. Then his wife, Marcia Lucas, who greatly influenced the Star Wars that we actually know and love.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, she's really the one responsible for the good parts.
She's the one who said, start the story here. No one wants to hear about that stuff. And
give this guy a personality.
And
he doesn't have one.
I, you know, whatever outline Lucas has for 7, 8, and 9, much like the prequels, is probably something that we don't care about.
Now, here's the thing that I'm still learning about that I want to clarify. Yeah. When they say Star Wars 7, 8, and 9, and they say, we want to make Star Wars 7, 8, 9 and starting in 2015. Are they literally saying, we want to make episode 7, 8, and 9? Or are they saying, we want to make a 7th, 8th, and 9th
They,
film?
I believe, said episode.
They use the term episode.
Yeah, yeah, they use the term episode.
And I don't think Mark Hamill's
George
coming
Lucas
back.
Was, if George Lucas was behind it, you'd be getting the story prior to Anakin.
But now in the video, like where George Lucas is talking about handing the reins over, he just says he has a treatment for episode 7, 8, 9, and then the news breaks that there's going to be a 7, 8, 9, but I didn't understand this.
The treatment
specifics.
Was giving it to Disney.
It was very interesting the way he phrased it, too, because he stipulated, like, he reinforced lengthy treatment, which is interesting.
Right.
You know, which means they're, you know, far along. And also, he kept saying we, as in, I don't know if that meant Kathleen and him, if that meant, like, some creative team he's been working with, if it's Disney, like, who knows what it is. And then he also mentioned that when he was handing everything over to Kathleen, he's like, you know, all these, you know, we have story ideas. That goes, and then he says Star Wars has hundreds of books and comics. He says, we've handed those over to Kathleen. And it was like he was very specific about mentioning all the books and comics that are being handed to her, you know, like decision-making control. And I wonder how much that influenced. I'm not trying to say they're going to make like a Thrawn trilogy movie, but they can probably freely borrow ideas from those books and comics.
And in many cases, they should.
So you're saying they'll put some of the expanded universe possibly in 7, 8, and 9?
That's like people want to see Mara Jade, so why not show
I also don't want to see a 50-year-old Jar Jar.
Well, no, but look.
Misa,
for the average dude on the street, you say, hey, they're making Star Wars 7, 8, and 9. And they're like, wait, you mean like after Return of the Jedi? And then you say, yeah. They're going to say, well, how are they going to, what, Luke Skywalker and Han Solo, are they going to be in it? And if now it's like, well, wait a minute, we're not including them, how is it episode 7, 8, and 9? Unless it's like...
just following the misadventures of our
Solo
2 and
3PO. Like, I mean, like if they follow the Solo kids.
Well, yeah, because the whole point is it's following basically a set of characters
the
or
bloodline.
A theme. Yeah, and it's pretty much done unless they're continuing with Luke and Leia, which I thought they were originally.
I mean, if they came out and announced, hey, we're going to be approaching Mark Hamill soon to play an old Jedi, I'd be like, I would be like,
they can't not do that. Like, because it
Mark
would
Hamill
make,
won't
it
come
would
back,
make,
it'll be weird.
I mean, it would make people shit themselves.
Yeah.
And so they want people to do that.
Yeah.
At least for one film.
Yeah. Have you seen Mark Hamill lately?
Yeah. He looks like a grizzled old badass.
They're going to have to use all of Industrial Light's technology to
Dude,
make him
I
look
good.
I don't
care, man. If Mark Hamill is down, then I am down.
Like, now, you have to get Carrie Fisher now, too. Slave outfit.
Dude, if Carrie Fisher's down for it, I'm down for it. But if something tells me that Harrison Ford's going to say hell no, and probably Carrie Fisher's going
to
say no.
I don't think Harrison Ford wants to do it anymore.
I mean, of the original crew, like, Harrison Ford is the one person that you will never see caught dead.
He regrets doing the Indiana Jones movie. I don't think he wants to fuck with Star Wars. He's learned his lesson.
Right. Mrs. Kennedy, if you can hear my voice, let me write a Star Wars movie about an old Luke Skywalker as an Obi-Wan mentor to the Solo children. Let me do this.
There is precedent for taking from Zahn's, like Timothy Zahn's work. I mean, Coruscant. The name Coruscant comes from the Thrawn trilogy. You know, it was George Lucas' idea that the Empire was stationed essentially on a giant planet, you know, city planet. But that name comes directly from the expanded universe. He mentions it in the prequels a bunch of times, or mentions the expanded universe in the prequels a few times. You know, who knows? We may see a bunch of elements from things like that, including a Jedi Academy on Yavin. Like, who knows?
Something I want to talk about is how this made me feel. You know, this news came out now, and it completely blindsided me because I just had no reason to expect it. It completely befuddled me, and I was like, my God, I didn't think that I was going to be challenged in my views towards Star Wars until I was an old man.
Yeah, same here.
Like, I didn't think that anything that was going to change. I knew that, you know, George Lucas would sit there being stubborn, and sooner or later, you know, maybe he'd decide to release the versions of the films that the fans by and large are interested in.
Or pass away.
And, or something. And here he is, very, like, gracefully, like, you know, I wanted to do this before I died. Here, let me just, like, let me take care of my affairs now. And all of a sudden, there's an opportunity. Because, you know, how many people who we've looked up to coming up after, people like us, a little bit older, but coming up after George Lucas, you know, would have wanted hands-on with Star Wars in the past. I mean, we mentioned Joss Whedon already. Like, him, well, I mean, Kevin Smith would have done this years ago, you know?
There were rumors that for the prequels, it was one of the early rumors was that George Lucas said he would want to direct Episode 1, that he would want Ron Howard to direct Episode 2.
Which would be great.
And then he wanted Steven Spielberg to direct Episode 3.
Yeah, but that didn't happen, because he couldn't really...
There's still persistent rumors that he directed portions of Episode 3.
That's true, too, but also...
I think he denies it.
The rumor also came in that... Spielberg's the one who encouraged him, said, no, George, these are your films.
Don't give
them to other people. Because George was the one who said that, oh, Empire and Return of the Jedi.
This is the first time I've ever wanted to punch Steven Spielberg.
Well, I mean, but I mean, really, though. No. And then, you know, to address the rumor that, oh, Spielberg directed a lot of Episode 3, meaning that supposedly he directed most of the final lightsaber fight between Obi-Wan and Anakin. And even Lucas has gone on record saying, oh, yeah, he deserves the credit for that and everything. And whatever, it's in the past. You know, we need to look forward. But it's like there was a precedence there for George early on saying he may not want to do it anymore. I think this is a good thing.
And, like, this is like if he was unhappy with it. He was pissing all of us off. I mean, this is a guy who I looked up to as a kid. It's like a creative.
I still look up to him, like, honestly.
Like he's a man who I kind of feel sorry for in a lot of ways.
No,
you know,
yeah.
Because. Because obviously he was good at some things and not good at other things. And then there were expectations and ego and an empire that he built and uncertainty and divorce and all this awful stuff. And it's not like I don't think he was an asshole for deciding that, no, I'm going to keep, you know, ramming this into the ground and everyone, I surround myself with a bunch of yes men who are never going to tell me no about these stupid ideas I have. I mean, because ultimately these are his stupid ideas, and they could have been, if he'd let people have hands on like they had in the original trilogy, like Star Wars, the original trilogy was a collaboration between a bunch of different filmmakers, and George Lucas was just the genesis of it.
See, now you can't, for this, I can't blame him completely, because I even saw we even watched videos of when he was trying to make the prequels, everyone was just a yes man. They wouldn't even challenge him. So I can't blame him completely.
Yeah,
they're just like, oh, yes, that's great, that's great.
That's a beautiful part in the Plinkett review for Episode 1, where they show that video after the first screening of, like, the initial edit of Episode 1, and everybody's standing around.
You see the look on their face, and they don't say anything. Like, oh, that looked a little long, and you can't take that out now. And they never argued with him in the first place like they did on the originals.
I'm glad for this. Like, I'm glad that he can go off and do what he wants to. It's just, you know... I don't want the motherfucker to be unhappy.
Right.
Just, like, let us be happy. You go be happy. Let's all be happy here. And I thought, my God, I'm going to see another Star Wars film. I'm actually going to be interested in checking it out. It could be bad, but it's going to be pretty challenging for it to get any worse.
At least you're guaranteed something new and fresh.
For the first time in my lifetime, it's the chance of going to see a Star Wars movie in the theater, and it won't for sure be bad.
Episode 1, it was the same way. Like, waiting in line for Episode 1, it was like, dude, this might define, like, as I was in, like, what, middle school, and I'm like, this movie could define the course of the rest of my life. Like,
we didn't know before we saw Episode 1 what it was. Yeah, we had no idea.
As far as movie experiences go, I was never happier in my life than opening night of Episode 1, packed house, and then the word Star Wars come on the screen and people scream.
I was
so
very
loud.
Confused by the end of that movie, by the way.
No more 20th Century Fox fanfare, by the way.
Oh.
Good.
Deal breaker. I'm out of here.
But here's the thing that troubles me is I was both really happy and sad when I heard the announcements. I was happy because obviously George Lucas doesn't have the control over it anymore, and Disney, you know, immediately announced Episode 7, 8, 9 already in 2015. I was like, that's amazing. The bad part is they've already come out and said things like every movie is going to be in 3D already. They said, which you kind of expect that at this point, but it seems to me like they're going to make it kind of for the Michael Bay generation. You know, it's 2015.
Well,
there has to be explosions and lights.
Avengers was in 3D. That doesn't mean it's a terrible film.
Yeah, I'm going to stop you real quick.
Yeah.
What movie is coming out this Friday that is done by Disney? Wreck-It Ralph. which is going to be this total like tribute to video game culture.
Man, I hope you're not eating those words later.
Okay,
yeah, I hope I'm not.
Okay, because you really could.
First
eat those
off,
words.
We don't know anything about this movie. I've seen the preview too. It could be nothing like it. Yeah. And if it is about that, it's going to probably bomb, and they'll never try to be creative again.
Our early reaction from over here has been that it's like a classic Disney film. Like Wreck-It Ralph is one of the best movies that Disney has done since, you know, like if you don't count Pixar movies, you know, that
since
Disney's
Tron Legacy,
animation
obviously.
Studio. Well, I mean, it.
Okay, look, shut up. The Tron Legacy was awesome.
Look, nobody sets out to make a bad movie.
Well, yeah. No, I think some people did.
You guys haven't seen my DVD shelf, have you?
Jumping off real quick, there was a question that's been circulating. We were even discussing this in the car. Indiana Jones. What's going to happen to that franchise? Because that's Lucasfilm.
Well, that's Paramount. Like that's
right
Paramount.
In the sit down. Robert Iger, the Disney CEO, did state that Paramount still has contract over it.
Right.
So that's something.
But Willow.
Yeah, I brought up Willow.
are you talking about?
No, it's like, what's new in the world of Willow?
Willow.
Oh, it's a Blu-ray now.
Yeah, please explain. Is there new Willow content I should be expecting?
There's no one. No one's talked about Willow.
There will never be new Willow content unless someone writes a book.
I mean, hey, I'm down for a new Willow.
You could write that
I'm
book,
down
Cap.
For new Willow?
Yeah.
There actually was a Willow book. It was co-written between Lucas and Chris Claremont, actually.
How good was it?
Two novels. I don't remember. I read it as a kid. It was a little too over my head, and I didn't care for it. Also, Chris Claremont is he's not so good anymore. It was in the mid-90s, though. Maybe it was all right. I don't know.
The studio made Willow.
The first thing that came to my mind was, well, here we have the forces behind Howard the Duck finally reunited again.
Marvel
I'd like to see a Howard the Duck 2. I feel like the first one didn't do it enough justice. I think there was that duck that had boobs, and it was very confusing. Because
we say all we needed to say with Howard the Duck?
I mean, ducks don't lactate, and she had boobs in the first scene. I don't get that.
I don't get it either, man.
She just cloak it up.
But the what's interesting is Marvel is actually, as far as media, I mean, they've always been proud of Howard as a... as a character, whether they're loving him or abusing him. They've actually started using him in media again. I saw some video at San Diego Comic-Con where they had like Howard walking around the Marvel office. And there's this like web series where it's like Howard and Squirrel Girl and a bunch of other C-listers hanging out.
What?
It's not very good, but it's there.
I mean, it's like Marvel is being daring if they're even willing to make a Guardians of the Galaxy fucking movie.
Rocket Raccoon.
I'm fucking excited about that.
I need to see how they're going to pull it off because I really don't know.
So to me, like, I'm excited about this for so many reasons.
It's going to be exciting to see what happens. Even if it's a flaming disaster, it's a second chance.
It's going to be fun to watch. I'm going to get popcorn.
Star Wars has a second chance.
Going back to what you're saying about, like, reaction to hearing the news.
Yeah.
Like, my reaction at first was like, you know, I was like, oh, wait, is it true? And then once it's like, no, for real, it's actually happening. It was like, oh, is this good or is this bad? I mean... Well, I guess they handled Marvel well. I guess they're handling Star Wars well. And everyone who's ever complained about the way George Lucas handled Star Wars, they should not complain anymore. Because it's like, this is literally being handed over to someone else who, at least as far as we know, seems like they can handle it. So everyone who's complained about, oh, George Lucas, it's like, well, what's there to complain about now? Everything you ever wanted is happening.
That's exactly where I was with this when I read about this earlier. And it was immediately what I took to social media to say to anyone who happens to read my bullshit online. You guys, I know it's you're in the habit of the last, God, 20, 30 years of bitching about everything George Lucas does. Maybe, you know, the brand of coffee he drinks to what that brand of coffee makes him do. But this should be the best news ever. Everyone who's complained about anything should be rejoicing
in
the streets.
You're right. I was ready to complain, but I shouldn't. Because, like, all he would do if he had control was keep butchering them more and more. And now someone else has a chance to butcher them. So I should be happier.
I mean,
and ultimately, at the end of the day, while, you know, all of us here have taken Star Wars very, very seriously to very different degrees, of course, it helps to remember, at the end of the day, it's just entertainment. And if you want entertainment, why would you turn to anyone but Disney to provide the best?
That's another really good point, was that, seriously, who else are you going to hand it over? And here's the other thing, Disney... Everything that they've been given with Star Wars has handled it really respectfully.
Absolutely.
Mean, with the exception of maybe one or two little action figures of Mickey holding a lightsaber, like, no, like, the stuff they did with the ride, the original ride was amazing. It's groundbreaking. What they did with the new ride, for those who haven't ridden it, even the stuff that takes place in the dirty prequel territory is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell the people who were involved in making the ride were fans and really cared about making it really awesome regardless of where
and,
it
yeah,
was.
And even if they didn't like the prequels, they would be like, well, we're making an awesome fucking Star Wars ride regardless.
So if you have that same attitude applied to everything in the Star Wars universe, like whether you're making more theme park stuff or comic books or novels or eventually movies, if they have that same approach, you really can't go wrong.
I feel like once we see who they pick for the director, then we'll kind of get a sense of where they want it to go. I feel like it's important right. to see who the first director is. And honestly, I think they already have it picked out right now. I wouldn't be surprised if it's announced
if
right now.
If they're already announcing.
Because like, it's already been being worked on. In 3 years, it's going to be done. I mean, they've already got it lined up.
But that doesn't
up.
Mean anything. Like, so, like
Zack know, Snyder.
Like, you know? Look, I'm a huge you know, I'm a huge Metal Gear fan. You know how many times they've announced a Metal Gear movie
Metal Gear.
And a writer
yeah.
and a release date?
But has like, it been Disney that announced it?
No, but this is like... This
hold
is
on. Anyone who thinks that Disney delivers things on time, I got four words for you. The Emperor's New Groove.
No, I got three words. The Lone Ranger.
Oh, you win.
No, like, the Lone Ranger, like, how long has it been delayed for? And, like, Gore Verbinski, who directed Pirates of the Caribbean.
Wait, are they still doing it?
Yeah, it's oh. coming out. It's oh. coming out. Like, they've released a teaser for it and everything. And I don't know if it's supposed to be, if it looks good or bad. I haven't seen anything other than, like, the poster for it. But that thing's been in the making for a long time. Had its yeah. budget has been everywhere from $200 million to $50 million to everything in between, regardless. It's been a crazy roller coaster, but they're still making it. And I did look it up, by the way, on the phone. Willow was done with 20th Century Fox.
Hmm. I mean, it's also important to keep in mind, too, when George Lucas went about the prequels, is I think we all kind of knew exactly, like, everyone knew who the creative team was going to be. They knew Rick McCollum was going to produce with them. They knew who, like, was going to be doing all the concept artwork and the production design and everything. And now Disney has the chance to hire their own people. It's like, it's not just important for who's going to direct it and who's going to write it, but, like, who's going to be doing concept illustrations for this new, you know, like, what's Star Wars' new aesthetic? Like, it's going to look different.
Well,
because
I would put money on it being awesome because Disney,
yeah.
you know, Disney now owns everything that Disney owns by itself of being artists. You know, they have the best in the world.
And now they have the subsidiaries of ILM
exactly.
And LucasArts.
The only people
and
that would like, compete.
Like, here we got, everybody working on Star Wars 1313, which is a multi-company project within Lucasfilm. And like Monkey Island, and Day of the
yeah.
Tentacle, and something a truth
the
a
dig,
truth bomb.
Personally, I like the dig.
A truth bomb that Doug dropped on us on the same trip was, and you're gonna Brandon when you hear this, you're gonna just be your brain's gonna break.
Tell me, it's already broken.
Fucking. There was a Monkey Island script, and they turned it into Pirates of the Caribbean. Pirates of the Caribbean.
You're joking.
Is based on a Monkey Island.
You're
script.
Joking.
Parts one
Fuck
and two.
You in the
Barbossa.
Mouth.
Loosely, it's loosely.
LeChunk.
Oh come on.
A zombie,
didn't
undead
you, wait,
pirate?
Now, wait, didn't you ever see that those memes online where they compare pictures of Barbossa
no.
as the ghost?
No,
like,
but I'm going to look
start
now.
You're believing in ghost stories because you're in one. And they put it next to ghost pirate LeChuck and you're like, holy
Why
shit.
Why the fuck didn't they make
and then, dude, picture in your head Guybrush, right? From the first game.
I'm just going to commit suicide
now. Run with it. Run with it.
Right now on the air.
No.
Guybrush from the first game is yes. in your head, right? What does
Orlando
Bloom look like in the first?
Oh,
the first
son of a dick! Except Orlando Bloom wasn't funny.
Yeah,
that's why they made
ponytail with a white shirt and a sword running around.
But that's why they made
Keira Knightley. Keira Knightley. She's not the governor. She's the governor's daughter.
Fuck me.
Who then becomes a pirate badass?
I'm gonna.
Who then actually, when her father dies, she becomes governor.
Where am I sleeping pills?
Okay, now look. I have to clear up though. It's not. It's. I'm not trying to suggest that there was a Monkey Island script that they just changed.
Clearly,
names.
You've convinced me. Because now I believe
not,
it. There's
like
no going back.
Because,
you could just tell me for 10 minutes, this is what happened, but this is not what I'm telling you.
No. It was loosely done. Because he wrote a Pirates of the Caribbean movie, and Disney didn't want to do it. And then it was like, well, let's try a Monkey Island movie. And that didn't happen. He's like, let me try one more time with Disney. And they're like, well, maybe. Let's change this. And it's
let's
like,
combine
it was a struggle.
Them.
It was a struggle to get the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie made. But a lot of the elements that are in the film were heavily taken from a Monkey Island idea, which is why, like, the voodoo lady in the swamp, and then the beginning of Dead Man's Chest, Jack Sparrow shoots out of the coffin, uses a bone to you know, to row
I'm
the
actually
coffin.
Surprised you remember all of this from the game. God damn.
I know, I'm a huge fan of the game.
Jeez.
Yeah, so, you know, it's, It's been strange.
That makes me
a
little bit happy and sad.
So, guys, as you can tell, there's a lot of feelings about this, but mostly they're feelings of excitement because we don't know what's for the first time ever.
Yeah,
we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. What if it's completely CG? I'm just putting that out there.
Well, it's a fucking Clone Wars.
Hey, you know what? If it's completely CG,
I mean,
hand
the people,
it over to Pixar.
Everything. Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, what if they just say Pixar make a Star Wars movie?
Animated.
I would be way down for a fucking Pixar movie Star Wars.
Yeah.
I guess I would. Yeah, I guess I probably, you know, I probably would. Let's do it. Make a 3D bucket. With some fireworks and that shit.
About Willow, it's like, what are they going to do with Willow? I'm like,
CG that midget up.
For Willow, you can give me a prequel starring Mad Mardigan, young Mad Mardigan.
Oh,
tell me the adventures of young Mad Mardigan are.
I would
badass.
Only see it if they actually got Val Kilmer and used CG to make him younger, because I like Val Kilmer in that.
I like Val Kilmer too. You know what? Fuck it, make him an old Mad Mardigan. Old man, like take old man Logan, old man Mad Mardigan. That's what I want.
Yeah,
I want that
done. Can you write that? Can you begin and send
I can
it?
Do that, Mrs. Kennedy. If you can hear my voice,
Kickstarter. We can do it.
Old man Mad Mardigan. Mr. Howard.
I was with a midget.
Mr. Howard, when you're done with Arrested Development, don't let me interrupt you. Contact me about Mad Mardigan. Post a link to my web zone on this episode.
Mark and Matt, any closing thoughts from you guys?
Sorry, go ahead.
At the same time, please.
Sorry about that. Just that I feel like in the end, it had to be Disney. I mean, if... You know, Cap, you should actually track this down from Jason. He has it. He has these PDF transcripts of like conversations between Spielberg and Lucas when they were going about writing Raiders of the Lost Ark. And Lucas has this like affinity back in the late 70s for all things Disney. I mean, he's obsessed. He's taking all these things from like Pirates of the Caribbean and applying it to like, you know, the first like treatment for Raiders.
Yeah. I read that transcript you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's fantastic. And you see exactly like how he got Star Wars and Indiana Jones out of the Disney mystique for like, just like the chance to bring people to like otherworldly adventure. And even when I have, which was a making of documentary of Captain EO that Whoopi Goldberg narrates, in which Lucas sits down and he explains that Disney was the studio that he constantly says should have made Star Wars, which is why he brought, you know, Captain EO there. It's why he brought Star Tours. And in the end, like, I feel good for him because he finally brought Star Wars to where he trusts it most. So, I mean, I'm happy for George because, you know, he leaves the franchise in the hands that he originally wanted to put it in. And I think that's, you know, good for all of us. I mean, it's whether or not the future movies are good. There's so many possibilities of theme parks and they said they have TV plans. And I mean, it's good because Star Wars was getting stagnant, even for someone who's been following it for such a long, long time. Like it was stagnant. I mean, I've explained that before. And now I feel the complete opposite. I was in Toys R Us just yesterday. And I picked up this adorable little R2-D2 plushie thing. And I was looking at all the amazing Lego sets that are from, you know, the prequel era and from the original trilogy era. And there's like a 9-year-old kid walking in front of me as I'm, you know, admiring these sets. And he looks at me and he's like, I have this one. I built this one. I have this one. And I'm bored with it now, though. He actually said that. But now there's going to be new sets. What's wrong with that?
It's weird that you actually have something to live for now for the next 9 years. Something that's going to keep you going for 9 more years.
As a counter to that story, I have to say really quick, the last time I rode the original Star Wars ride at MGM, when it was still MGM, and I went in there and I'm like, oh, childhood memories. This is great. Oh, I'm going to miss the ride. This is fantastic. Oh, it was whatever. And I'm on the ride and we're having fun and it's, you know, blasting everything. Now, there were like 4 boys that... couldn't have been older than 6 years old that were right in front of me. And I really was hoping that they were liking it and they weren't like, where's Jar Jar or anything else. But when the ride ended and the lights came up and the music hits and everyone stands to get off the ride, the one kid just gets up and screams, that was awesome! And the rest of them freak out. Like, to them, it was the greatest ride they'd ever been on. Like, I couldn't imagine them saying that off of Winnie the Pooh. You know, like this, they lost their shit. And I was like, I was reassured, like, man, it still works. It still can reach everyone. And, you know, for a kid who might be like, well, I'm bored building. Maybe he was bored building Legos, but not Star Wars. And then it reinvigorated me when I rode the new rides. So now I'm even more excited because, like you say, the sky's the limit. Anything can happen. So for the first time since the announcement of prequels, I'm like,
Whoa.
We still need to brace ourselves for disappointment, just in case. Just not get our hopes up too much in case that happens
again.
Well,
here's the thing.
I want to commit suicide.
I can
well, instead of... No. Don't look at it like, oh, I have to brace for disappointment so much as, hey, I'm just not expecting my world to change.
I got a question for Mark.
Yes.
Because a friend of mine on Facebook voiced about how excited he was that he would be able to introduce his daughter to Star Wars and see it in the theater with her for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
See it with her. And I know you've been recently introducing your daughter to Star Wars.
Yeah, she's mostly MST3K-ing it, but yeah.
Like, so that's acceptable. To you, like, how I'm curious about your thoughts about a brand new Star Wars that you would get to share with her.
Well, I there's really no answer I can give you on that isn't, yes, I'm excited, because otherwise, what a crotchety old dick I'd sound like, you know? but beyond that, of course I'm excited to experience that and watch her get to see the true fanfare that I've only been able to explain to her, like, hey, whole city block shut down when this movie opens. Of course I'm excited to live through that, but... as, you know, an overgrown man-child myself, the part that I'm most excited about with this is that unless we're talking like the direct-to-video, you know, terrible sequels to Aladdin or something, even when Disney makes a bad picture, the heart is still incredibly evident. Even in Disney's most misguided failures, you can see so much heart. And as much as I do enjoy the prequels, I don't love them, but I enjoy them. I felt like a lot of that heart was missing. I didn't feel that warm, cuddly embrace from them. And now there's a chance for all of us to feel it again, and possibly for fans, little kids, to watch 7, 8, and 9 and go, I love these characters, and then go back and watch the prequels and go, who the hell is this Jar Jar guy? Like, history could really rewrite itself.
I think that episodes 7, 8, 9 are going to have the most basically turnout ever, because you have all the people that were disappointed in the prequels wanting to go and hope that it's amazing. And you have all the people that love the prequels who are going to go and hope it's amazing. So you're going to have people on both sides all going to episode 7.
But again, now it just really depends on who they get to work on it, what they announce is going to be. I personally think this is all good news. The one bit of thing that I was uncomfortable with was that they announced a release date already.
They already knew. They already have begun working on it.
Right. Now, because granted, we only heard about this, 4 hours ago is when the news broke, so maybe tomorrow we'll have even better information. But as it stands right now, I was uncomfortable with the fact that they already have a release date plan, but if later on they say, oh no, we've actually secretly been working on it for about 6 months, you know, and we think that that's a good estimate. They're like, all right, well then that's okay. But if Disney immediately said, gimme, here's the date, writers, we're going to underpay you because you're going to be happy to be working on Star Wars. Go write something. It has to be done in 3 months because we start shooting in 6 months.
Well, that's the thing. They never said they were going to start episode 7.
I want
that job.
They just
said it's going to be released.
One of the blogs I saw on StarWars.com today, it was from, I can't remember which Lucasfilm rep it was, but apparently they had a like all divisions meeting back in early June where they brought in like LucasArts and people from the website and people from Clone Wars and ILM and Skywalker. And they said, like, they opened the meeting with, we're making 7, 8, and 9. So clearly since at least early June, it's been known at Lucasfilm by everybody. So there may have been some creative team stuff way before that. So
they could have been working on it for like 4 months.
Listen, on a personal note, can we all just agree that the best part of George not making all the final decisions anymore is that in our lifetime, we may get the holiday special on DVD?
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if Disney ever wants to repackage that shit.
I want
how many
it.
Ways can you repackage a piece of turd and give it
I to just me? I just want the full Ewoks TV show, like just the full thing. Like,
was that never released on DVD?
No, they
did individual episodes, like four of them
Ewoks
or something.
Terrible.
I got those are on DVD.
I like the Ewoks movies okay, but they've only done like a sort of a composite of a bunch of episodes of the cartoon where it kind of is assembled like a movie, and the same with the droids series. But the droid series I have a lot of love for, and I think that they're incredibly mishandled by Lucasfilm, so I'm excited to see that maybe rectified in the future too.
So I guess the number one thing that we can all agree in serious note, as opposed to the, I mean, I'll speak for myself, I'm not excited for a Christmas special, but but a legit
it's okay to be wrong.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll take it. But a serious, legit release of the original trilogy, because like, again, George Lucas isn't a great businessman, but Mrs. Kennedy is. She goes, wait a minute. What's the one thing everybody wants?
Even they won't before, do that. Even they're before, not going to take out the special.
I am willing to bet there is already a clause in this contract that the Masters stay put as is.
Like, they're not going to reverse engineer a movie. No one's ever done that. Well, and put back on,
and I think she oversaw the changes they made to E.T. also. Because, I mean, they had made
but
some
no, no,
changes.
But now, wait, on that note, but on the Blu-ray, I recently got the Blu-ray for E.T., there's none of the special stuff in there. It's all the original.
Oh,
yeah, it's 100% original.
Wait, the new Blu-ray that came out
the
has
Blu-ray
none
for
of
the E.T. has none for the new Blu-ray for E.T. has none of the extra stuff that was put in on any
WTF
other
BBQ.
No, they have the delete like the CG E.T. and deleted scenes. Those are in the deleted scenes on the special features menu.
Even the walkie-talkies?
No, the walkie-talkies are not on there. Why? It's all original. The
so
way
you think
it
they
was.
Might Spielberg, do that with
Spielberg
Star Wars.
Admitted he made a mistake.
Yeah, Spielberg asked the audience. He's in a Q&A panel, and he asked the audience, hey, audience, we're making an E.T. movie soon, or an E.T. Blu-ray soon. Would you be upset if we don't include the special edition? And everyone's like, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, all right, then consider it theatrical version only. And everybody flipped their shit. And yeah. He kept true to his word.
Awesome.
The DVD is pure theatrical version.
I think
back what I said earlier about wanting to punch Steven Spielberg.
I think what is likely, unless Lucas is really, really adamant about it, you know, we could get Blade Runner, basically. You know, here's every
yes.
version. To
yes.
a, every version to a fault, whatever you want, pick
care.
Your
yeah.
poison.
I don't care what other version you want to put on there, but if you give me the original version, it's like, that's all I want. Just give me the original version, and you can have anything else on top of it, and that's fine.
I'll go with the THX audio remasters. Those 201s are a little weak.
No, you guys said George Lucas is a great businessman. Maybe this was his ploy from the beginning, is to make
as many special features as possible
and then resell the original 20 years later.
I think that he wasn't a very good businessman. Like, he was a decent businessman for a guy who wanted to be a creative person.
This could have been all part of his plot to sell the original versions again.
George Lucas was a brilliant creative visionary who then found himself with more money than he knew what to do with, and then clearly there's unequivocal evidence about this, he just lost his fucking mind.
Well, I'm sure he just had like a stroke and you couldn't tell under all of his chin fat, but I think it was there.
Man, it's burning Lucas down.
Before we go, I did actually have an arbitrary pointless question for everyone,
please,
mostly for the listeners, but I was gonna ask each of you, which person you would like to see direct the movie more than anyone?
Ooh.
Just go around the table and basically say, which person would you want to see from your own biased opinions direct episode 7? Cap.
Okay. David Lynch, obviously. No. He's already turned it down.
They didn't ask him.
They did.
What?
They asked him to direct Return of the Jedi. He turned it down. It was hilarious.
Anyway.
He's got a great story about it. Joss is really compelling. He's really, really compelling. There was a but attached to that. But I think that I would...
You would bring the humor back to Star Wars. Definitely.
It's tough. This is going to sound weird, especially after everything that's happened recently. I really want to see Kevin Smith direct Star Wars. Mm. Or a Star Wars. Not all of Star Wars, but a Star Wars. Because
I see what you're saying, but I think Kevin Smith would be the first person to tell you that's a terrible idea.
I know.
You might not want that responsibility.
I know I might regret this, but it's just like, I feel like if...
This is theoretical.
I would not want to see Kevin Smith direct Episode 7. I want to see Kevin Smith direct his own Star Wars movie.
Well, that's what he wants anyway.
Yeah. It's mostly that if the door was open, he would have done it a long time ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's someone who he's kissed Lucas's ass ever since they got close to each other, and that's a little disconcerting. But because there's an awful lot of shit to kiss that ass through, I'm curious. He's a professional fan who I related to
as a little kid. The best stuff.
And I'm really curious, since this is purely hypothetical.
Yeah.
I'm sure when not on the spot, I can come up with a better candidate aside from the obvious
Whedon thing.
Here's the thing, we'll open this up to the forums. We'll have a whole forum posting about it. When I think of who else I'm interested in, I'll post there.
All right.
Here's my challenge. I want someone to make a movie even worse. I want Episode 7 to be even worse than the prequels.
So who would you have direct
Midnight Shenanigans? For some reason, the little voice in my head that's screaming is like, I want to see John Carpenter's Star Wars.
You know what? I'll fucking see that. That's good. Sounds like a good time. Whatever.
See?
I don't care if it's good or bad. It's going to be hilarious.
I know. That's what I want. I want Kurt Russell.
It's
going to
be scary, too.
Kurt Russell's a fucking old man Jedi.
I'm a Jedi.
With an eye patch.
A laser eye patch.
Someone who would do a great job, probably, I would speculate, is Duncan Jones. In all seriousness, Duncan Jones.
That's exactly where I was going to go.
I was going to say me.
If you can pick yourself, but if you had to pick someone else.
My serious answer, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Who is he? I don't know who he is.
There Will Be Blood.
Oh.
This is like, you know, and he recently did The Master. I'm like, I want Empire Strikes Back, dark Star Wars, Paul Thomas Anderson.
But they got to keep it PG-13 now for marketing.
I don't think he would do it, but I would be interested to hear his take. Because he almost did, Paul Thomas Anderson? It was Darren Aronofsky who almost did The Wolverine. And Paul Thomas Anderson, so close. I thought would be like, in that same vein of taking someone serious, like a really great filmmaker, giving them something to a universe to play in, I would love to see his take on Star Wars. Wow. Or, you know what, Darren Aronofsky would be interesting, but it wouldn't be quite a mass appeal probably as much.
Okay, Mark.
I'm going to go a little selfish here, and both of them are very unrealistic for two very different reasons. The one that's completely unrealistic, but would be awesome, Irvin Kershner.
No, that was almost my first answer.
I mean, let's just not even fuck around with it. But no. Secondly...
I pres him, man. Yeah. Black magic, dude. Let's get him back.
Kickstarter going.
It's going to be like Weekend at Bernie's, but Weekend at Irwin's.
No, we got to unfreeze Walt Disney. We got to unfreeze Walt Disney from under the castle and get him to do it.
Who else did you have?
But, you know, on a serious note, and this would never happen likely due to age and him probably being impossible to work with now. But it's the most predictable answer that Mark would ever give you. Bob Raffleson. Bob Raffleson did a lot of he was behind a lot of big films like Five Easy Pieces and Postman Always Rings Twice. And here's where it's going to get predictable. He was also the guy behind the Monkees film Head, which turned an industry that had gotten so big and corporate on its ear. And I think that he would be able to direct a lot of almost like snake eating its own tail commentary into the Star Wars 7 about the Star Wars universe and how seriously it's taken itself.
That's a strange answer. I'm interested.
I like it. Okay, Matt.
As soon as you asked the question, Brandon, I started to type out a few
ones. It's like about top two my, pages top of my head. Right now.
Gore Verbinski, because the man knows swashbuckling action. He does. Like, I mean, Rango's action scenes plus like the pirates action scenes, whether or not the second or third movie were good or not, like, the action was great, so I think he really has an eye for that sort of thing. Because of their work with the revival of the Bond franchise, Martin Campbell or Sam Mendes. I was thinking also J.J. Abrams, because he already brought some Star Wars to Star Trek. So, possibility. And also, the one that I really would want, Edgar Wright.
We can only have one.
Wow. Whoa!
Yeah, I think I'd like to see Edgar Wright do it.
I think my dream joke answer was going to be Joss Whedon, because I'm like, yeah, that'd be awesome. No, it is. I want Edgar Wright. I think Edgar Wright would be fucking perfect.
Also, the fellow who directed Iron Giant and Finding Nemo and John Carter would be a good choice. I don't remember his name, but I mean, that guy knows how to direct his way through a very vast, composited alien world.
Yeah,
I believe you mix, like, there's two people I think in that. Like, Andrew Stanton did John Carter, and he did. But I think Iron Giant was Brad Bird.
Oh, you're right. You're right. It was Brad Bird.
And Brad both Bird. Of I believe both of them are on projects right now. I think Brad Bird was like the first person I thought of. I thought like Disney would go to Pixar to find somebody. And I know Brad Bird's working on some, like, it's called like 1951. I think it's like a Roswell type alien movie. So he's like busy. But exactly. He could put that aside. As a matter of fact, there was some rumors right away that project was actually the new Star Wars movie, and that it might have been like a code name. But shit. Some people are already like, no, it's a real movie. So one of the best Star Wars documentaries I ever saw was the one that was on the original Star Wars DVD set, The Making of an Empire. And George Lucas started talking how, like, he thinks the reason why Star Wars was so successful was because if you look at like cinema right before Star Wars came out, it was such like a reflection of the Vietnam era of just like, you know, it's shit. We're in a war we're never coming out of, and it's dark and it's dreary. But like right there when it came out, we started to sort of like, We hit rock bottom. We started to kind of move ourselves up. We may like be on our way to that by the time this comes out. Like, the prequels came out during a time that we were like on our way down. So I think we were more cynical when we looked at it. But if we're like, you know, things turn around in this election and we start to head way up, like, a great, adventurous, fun Star Wars movie might be at the right time.
That's an excellent point, because, I mean, listen to this right now. We're pretty cynical, like, oh, man, new Star Wars. Is it okay to like it? Whereas back when they announced the first Star Wars, it's like, what, a stupid space movie? Who gives a shit? You know, it's somewhat similar situation going on.
Obviously, Mel Brooks should direct.
But now, was it Mark? Did you say Irving Kershner?
Yes.
Yeah, my Irving Kershner answer is Akira Kurosawa.
All your answers were good, wrong, but good. Clearly, the only obvious person who could direct Episode 7 is Luc Besson. He's already proven that he can do sci-fi, he can do strange, he can do funny.
Yeah, I want that.
I would instantly go a million times over if it was Luc Besson.
No, I'm not feeling it.
Clearly, with Serra doing the music, it'd be great.
Oh, Eric Serra, oh man. Oh shit. Well, okay. That's what we got for now. You're definitely going to hear us talk more about this in the future. There's no way around it. Before we go, I got to give some big ups to our fan community, because you guys have done an awesome job supporting us these last couple months. But we haven't had a chance to give you guys the props you deserve on an episode. So here goes. First off, congrats to Viral Demon, who became an official producer of the show. He supported us enough that he actually crossed that threshold. He's the second person to do it after Trench 88. Kudos to you, man. That's absolutely incredible. You are too kind and amazing for believing in us that much. Everybody who supported us in September: Red Eye Phoenix, Cassie Muldrow, Brent Richard, Berto Elcon, Caitlin Kruger, Trench 88, Fuman Chuchu, Kyle Calder, Dan Blake, Gerard Oates Haggard, Big Bad Shadow Man, Garayur, Viral Demon, Mr. Matt, and Durafago. They supported us for a total of $520, supplying a lot of the equipment that we're recording with this evening, including a new mixer and the mic that I'm using right now, who we've nicknamed Black Betty. Brent Burchard said, "Here's some money because I love Derpy Show. It's quickly becoming one of my favorite podcasts." Caitlin Kruger said, "I got a new job. Now shut up and take my money, or just keep producing more awesome shows. That works too." Kyle Calder said, "Here's some fancy coffee money to help you guys get D&D episode 22 finished." And we did. Gerard Oates Haggard says he's an Orlando Weekly freelancer, and he thinks it would be an excellent idea to interview local Orlando visual artist Maz Armageddon. And I'm following the guy on Twitter now, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, God, that means he knows my girlfriend.
Oh, well. Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Gary Yer says, "You guys are still awesome. Thanks for actually pronouncing my name right, or pretty close to it, on the second attempt. I don't even, hopefully I'm getting it right this time. I don't remember what we did last time." Viral Demon says, "Here's some money for hopefully getting another microsode. I've said this before, but I was really happy with the Mimetics episode, so I definitely want more." I believe he did. He's got quite a few in the can. There's a list of all our microsodes.
Yeah, some of those are my fault. We'll get to those.
Okay. Matthew McCracken said, "Great job as always. I see you need $100 for the new mixer. Take it and make it your own. Love Dungeons and Doritos." And so we did.
Awesome.
October. We are in the 30th day of October, and we've met both our baseline support goal of $300, which is how much it costs to run the show and keep all of our bills and everything going. And we met our support goal,
really?
Which was $500 to get Colin flown from Nashville to Orlando to record the season finale of D&D with us.
I am excited to punch him.
However, I just want to let everybody know there's a certain Colin is definitely flying down for that D&D finale, but there is an air of uncertainty about when we'll be recording it, because due to the massive storms on the East Coast, Lefty Lucy's schedule is a bit dubious. Coney Island was a story underwater. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if we'll have to reschedule. And if we do have to reschedule, because we've got two different parties of role players at the same time, it could actually delay D&D 1 or 2 months. It's a huge deal. This is the season finale. We've been planning it for a long time. So I'll keep everybody posted on what's up with that. But either way, Colin is flying in, and it's all thanks to you guys.
And I will be punching him.
You will punch him square in the jaw.
Oh, God.
There will be a video posted.
So thanks to Man with Case, Gary Ure, Blake Holman, Stuart Edney, Big Bad Shadow Man, Tim Labonte, Caitlin Kruger, Rebecca Greer, Mauron, Jeffrey Voss, Viral Demon, Frozen Treasure, Ben Kidd, Ethan Kruger, Joe Barta, Cassie Muldrow, Ross Butler, Tyler Conrad, Patrick Webster, and Trench 88. Man with Case said, "No clever message, just the bucks. Love to all Nerdy Show." Blake Holman said, "I've been following D&D from the beginning, and I finally have a few dollars to throw your way. Keep up the good work. You guys are amazing." Brent Bruchard said, "This is for the awesome episode of Dungeons & Doritos. Also, can you get the Derpy Show guys to say their names at the start of the show? I love the show, but have no idea which voice is which."
That's a great idea.
I did tell them that, and they've since made it a habit. So thank you. Suggestions are always welcome. Big Bad said, this is very interesting. "This money is to pay back Two Thumbs for the hotel room from Nerdapalooza." As such, he spent this money on Two Thumbs' behalf to us and earned a microsode, which he then gave to Two Thumbs.
That's hilarious. Two Thumbs kidnapped me in a good way and took me out to drinks. It was great.
He also supported us again later on and said, I'd like to say I totally enjoyed season one of Ghostbusters Resurrection. So here's some money for that, as well as some as thanks for the new episode of D&D.
That's very flattering. Thank you.
Joe Barta said, thanks for all you guys do. And then later on, supported us in such a way so that there was only a dollar left till the next microsode. He's like, and he posted on Twitter, get a microsode for just a dollar. and he did. And Gary Yer claimed it.
That's great.
Patrick Webster said, Barty is absent. It's dangerous to go alone. Take this and send us some money. Ben Ked said, gotta help a gleeman in need. Frozen Treasure said, I like when it gets close enough that I can afford supporting you guys and get a microsode at the same time. Unfortunately, at that time, a bunch of people donated at once and he missed it by just a few minutes.
Oh.
But them's the breaks. Whenever you see us posting on Twitter or Facebook about, oh man, there's only a little bit left, it's a, you know, see what you can do to grab it. It can get pretty tooth and nail there. Viral Demon said, thought I'd put in some money for this month. Really excited for the end of D&D Book 2. Jeffrey Voss said, keep up the great work. I'm loving almost all the new content. And I'd love to hear what you almost don't like as much as the other stuff. We do love, you know, criticisms are welcome. So if you got anything to say to us about this episode, you want to tell Brandon what... And the rest of us, who you'd like to direct the new Star Wars, please comment on the forum. There'll be links to all that on this episode's page. Thanks so much for joining us. We together, as a nerdy whole, we eagerly hold hands and anticipate the new Star Wars.
Well, indeed. To put us out, take us out with Star Wars new overlords. Back in 2004, Disney released an album called Mosh Pit on Disney. And that was a cover album of a bunch of different Disney songs and included such acts as Andrew W.K., Real Big Fish, and Brian Setzer. Huh. This Weird. Particular song is Japanese pop rocker Kenzie Masubuchi, and this song is the Main Street Electrical Parade Baroque Hoedown. And it is fun, it's intense, and it has a little kazoo in it.
And it's a song that They Might Be Giants actually covered on another Disney compilation.
Oh, really?
Which we played in an episode years ago.
Cool.
Yeah. So, bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Hex.
Bye, I'm Brandon.
Bye, I'm Doug.
I'm Matt.
Bye, I'm Mart.
Enjoy.
Nerdasaur. Nerdasaur brought to you by Comic Shop Nerdapalooza. Playing trailer reader and listeners like you. If you enjoyed what you heard, support Nerdasaur by telling a friend. Picking up some merch at the Nerdasaur or donate directly to receive exclusive perks. For more episodes of Nerdasaur, Dungeons and Doritos, video contest, and other nerdy programming, visit Nerdasaur.com. Scabby 420 somewhere. You can subscribe to our Nerdasaur podcast via the iTunes Store. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Tumblr. That was wrong. That would have felt it.
What'd I tell you about cussing?
No, you don't get on me. Don't you rag on me, you son of a bitch. Fuck you. And get social with that Nerdasaur nerd.
Stop hanging out with Shake.
At nerdasaur.com/ I'll hang out with Shake anytime I want to. You tell me I'll suck your balls, you son of a bitch.
He's not your friend, me boy. He tries to kill you.
Man, he my friend. You tell me he my friend. You go put yourself in the washing machine.
All right, well, I had it with you.
Fuck you. Check it out.